Part 5, Closing Reflections. Chapter 15, The Spiritual Life and Spiritual Values.
Religion should be a remedy to help reduce the conflict and suffering in the world, not another source of conflict.
The art of happiness has many components. As we've seen, it begins with developing an understanding of the truest sources of happiness and basing our priorities in life on the cultivation of those sources. It involves an inner discipline, a gradual process of rooting out destructive mental states and replacing them with positive, constructive ones, such as kindness, tolerance, and forgiveness. In identifying the factors that lead to a full and satisfying life, we conclude with a discussion of the final component, spirituality. There is a natural tendency to associate spirituality with religion. The Dalai Lama's approach to achieving happiness has been shaped by his years of rigorous training as an ordained Buddhist monk. He's also widely regarded as a preeminent Buddhist scholar. For many, however, it is not his grasp of complex philosophical issues that offers the most appeal, but rather his personal warmth, humor, down-to-earth approach to life, and his ability to relate to people as simply one human being to another. Despite his position as one of the most prominent religious figures in the world, it is clear that he does not regard adherence to any one religion as the only form of spirituality.
I believe that it is essential to appreciate our potential as human beings and to recognize the importance of inner transformation. This should be achieved through what could be called a process of mental development. Sometimes I call this having a spiritual dimension in one's life. There can be two levels of spirituality. One level of spirituality has to do with one's religious beliefs. In this world, there are so many different people, so many different dispositions. There are 5 billion human beings, and in a certain way, I think we need 5 billion different religions. I believe that each individual should embark upon a spiritual path that is best suited to his or her mental disposition, temperament, belief, family, and cultural background. Now, for example, as a Buddhist monk, I find Buddhism to be most suitable. So, for myself, I found that Buddhism is best. But that does not mean Buddhism is best for everyone. The purpose of religion is to benefit people. And I think that if we only had one religion, after a while it would cease to benefit many people. If you had a restaurant, for instance, and it only served one dish day after day for every meal, that restaurant wouldn't have many customers left after a while. People need and appreciate diversity in their food because there are so many different tastes. In the same way, religions are meant to nourish the human spirit, and I think we can learn to celebrate that diversity and develop a deep appreciation of the variety of religions. So, certain people may find Judaism, the Christian tradition, or the Islamic tradition to be the most effective for them. Therefore, we must respect and appreciate the value of all the different major world religious traditions. I think that one way of strengthening the mutual respect is through closer contact between those of different religious faiths, personal contact. I have made efforts over the past few years to meet and have dialogues with the Christian community and the Jewish community, and I think that some really positive results have come of this. Through this kind of closer contact, we can learn about the useful contributions that these religions have made to humanity and find useful aspects of other traditions that we can learn from. We may even discover methods and techniques that we can adopt in our own practice. All of these religions can make an effective contribution for the benefit of humanity. They are all designed to make the individual a happier person and the world a better place. However, in order for the religion to have an impact in making the world a better place, I think it's important for the individual practitioner to sincerely practice the teachings of that religion. You must integrate the religious teachings into your life, wherever you are, so you can use it as a source of inner strength. And you must gain a deeper understanding of the religion's ideas, not just on an intellectual level, but with a deep feeling, making it part of your inner experience. There are so many things that divide humanity, so many problems in the world. Religion should be a remedy to help reduce the conflict and suffering in the world, not another source of conflict. So it is essential that we develop closer bonds among the various religions. Through this, we can make a common effort for the benefit of humanity.
During the Dalai Lama's week of public talks in Tucson, he spoke about his own practices of prayer and meditation, and ways to make the spiritual life part of one's inner experience.
I think prayer is, for the most part, simple daily reminders of your deeply held principles and convictions. I myself repeat certain Buddhist verses every morning. The verses may look like prayers, but they are actually reminders. Reminders of how to speak to others, how to deal with people, how to deal with problems in one's daily life, things like that. So for the most part, my practice involves reviewing the importance of compassion, forgiveness, all these things. And of course, it also includes certain Buddhist meditations about the nature of reality, and also certain visualization practices. So in my own daily practice, my own daily prayers, if I go leisurely, it takes about 4 hours. It's quite long.
The thought of spending 4 hours a day engaged in spiritual practices raised a question about how to make time for spiritual exercises and prompted one of the Dalai Lama's most enlightening observations about the limitless nature of a spiritual life.
If you make the effort, you can always find some time, say in the early morning, or sometime like the weekend. You can sacrifice some of your fun. So at least I think daily, say half an hour. Or if you make the effort, try hard enough, perhaps you may be able to find 30 minutes in the morning and 30 minutes in the evening. If you really think about it, maybe it is possible to figure out a way of getting some time. However, one should not confine one's understanding of spiritual practice only in terms of some physical activities or verbal activities, like doing recitations of prayers and chanting. If your understanding of spiritual practice is limited only to these activities, then of course you will need a specific time, a separate, allotted time to do your practice. Because you can't go around doing your daily chores like cooking and so on while reciting mantras. That could be quite annoying to people around you. However, if you understand spiritual practice in its true sense, then you can use all 24 hours of your day for your practice. True spirituality is a mental attitude that you can practice at any time. For example, if you find yourself in a situation where you might be tempted to insult someone, then you immediately take precautions, restrain yourself from doing that. Similarly, if you encounter a situation where you may lose your temper, immediately be mindful and say, "No, this is not the appropriate way. That is actually a spiritual practice. Seen in that light, you will always have time." This reminds me of one of the Tibetan Kadampa masters, Potawa, who said that for a meditator who has a certain degree of inner stability and realization, every event, every experience you are exposed to comes as a kind of teaching. It's a learning experience. I think this is very true. So in speaking of having a spiritual dimension to one's life, we have identified one's religious beliefs as one level of spirituality. Now regarding religion, if you believe in any religion, that's good. But even without a religious belief, we can still manage. In some cases, we can manage even better, but that's our own individual right. If we wish to believe good, If not, it's all right. But then there's another level of spirituality. That is what I call basic spiritual values, basic human qualities of goodness, kindness, compassion, caring. So this, whether you are a believer or a non-believer, this kind of spirituality is very essential. I personally consider this second level of spirituality to be more important than the first, because no matter how wonderful a particular religion may be, it will still only be accepted by a limited number of human beings, only a portion of humanity. But as long as we are human beings, so long as we are members of the human family, all of us really need these basic spiritual values. Without this, human existence remains hard, very dry. As a result, the individual himself or herself cannot be a happy person. One's whole family will suffer, and then, eventually, society will be more troubled. In general, it is possible to indicate your particular religious or spiritual way of life through external means, such as wearing certain clothes, or having a shrine or altar in your house, or by doing recitations and chanting and so on. However, these practices or activities are secondary to conducting a truly spiritual way of life based on the basic spiritual values, because it is possible that all these religious activities can still go along with a person harboring a very negative state of mind. But true spirituality should have the result of making a person calmer, happier, more peaceful. So engaging in training or a method of bringing about inner discipline within one's mind is the essence of a religious life, an inner discipline that has the purpose of cultivating these positive mental states. Thus, whether one leads a spiritual life depends on whether one has been successful in bringing about that disciplined, tamed state of mind and translating that state of mind into one's daily actions.
The Dalai Lama's own ever-present sense of compassion was demonstrated over and over during his time in Arizona, as I saw people from all walks of life transformed by their contact with him, sometimes in just the briefest of moments. One afternoon, the Dalai Lama was due to attend a small reception. Outside the reception room, a large crowd had gathered in anticipation of his appearance. By the time he arrived, the crowd had become quite dense. Among the onlookers was a man of indeterminate age, possibly in his mid-20s or early 30s, tall and very thin. He was notable for his disheveled appearance, but he had caught my attention because of his expression, for it was one that I had frequently seen among my patients: anxious, profoundly depressed, in pain. As the Dalai Lama arrived, the crowd condensed, pressing forward to greet him, and the security staff, most of them volunteers, struggled to hold back the advancing mass of people and clear a path to the reception room. The troubled young man, now with a somewhat bewildered expression, was crushed forward by the crowd and pushed to the edge of the clearing made by the security team. As the Dalai Lama made his way through, he noticed the man, broke free from the mooring of the security crew, and stopped to talk to him. The man was startled at first and began to speak very rapidly to the Dalai Lama, who spoke a few words in return. I couldn't hear what they were saying, but I saw that as the man spoke, he started to become visibly more agitated. The man continued to speak, but instead of responding, the Dalai Lama spontaneously took the man's hand between his, patted it gently, and for several moments simply stood there, silently nodding. As he held the man's hand firmly, looking into his eyes, it seemed as if he were completely unaware of the mass of people around him. The look of pain and agitation suddenly seemed to drain from the man's face, and tears ran down his cheeks. Although the smile that surfaced and slowly spread across his features was thin, a look of comfort and gladness appeared in the man's eyes.